Good morning, and I'd like to say that I consider this a very special pleasure and privilege. My family goes way back with this school. I think all of my daughters taught here at one point. I think so. And now, of course, my granddaughter here and some very good friends. So it's really, really very special for me to be here. In fact, we hope to be able to have, at least with the junior high school, some more sessions to try to fine-tune, and maybe the word that we like to use is to better reach our students with a passionate and lasting commitment to Yiddishkeit. That's really the goal. So I'd like today to begin. We divide our program into four units, four major units, and then subunits. And the four major units are relationship with Hashem, relationship with our Talmidim, Talmidois, Maimon Har Sinai, Emuna, Bitochon, and then the being able to clearly, in so many different ways, articulate why learning Torah is of such a primary importance and significance in Yahadus. A question that many ask, and many claim they have never heard satisfying enough answers to explain why v'talmud Torah k'neged kulam, and again and v'gisava yom v'layla. So those are the four major units, and everything fits underneath that. Today we'd like to talk about a little bit of an introduction, and then about the first unit, which deals with developing a relationship with Hashem, which is, I think, very, very important. Just by way of an introduction, the definition of chinuch. We're all mechanchim, mechanchos, and it's very important to see how Chazal define, in its essential ingredient, what chinuch is all about. And really, there's a Rashi in Parshas Lech Lecha, I believe, where it says by Avraham Avinu Bayor, I guess, chanichov, which is a loshen chinuch, and Rashi defines chinuch as tchilas knisas odom. He says oikelim, but that's not legal to us. Tchilas, the beginning of the knisas odom leumnes sheosid lamod boy, to a profession, to a trade, to a way of life that he's destined to remain with. And I think that really says a lot. The ultimate goal of chinuch is not discipline, is not control of the classroom, is not how many positive, exciting, inspiring moments we can have. The goal is that it's something that it's a umnis she'osid lamud boy. We're all looking to the future. Now, as an individual Rebbe or Mora and dealing with a class, the direct goal, and probably the most overwhelming goal, is to make this class work. But there always has to be, we're looking beyond just this day, we're looking beyond just this year, we're looking to a lifetime of, as we like to say, passionate commitment and lasting commitment to Yahadus. And that's the ultimate goal. There's something else, I think, in the definition. Tchilas knisas, what's that? The beginning of the entry. Sounds like chinuch is not the entry. It's only the beginning of the entry. What does that mean? So I would dare say that what that likely means is that we have to give them the tools so they can now enter themselves. We're giving them the tchilas knisas. We're giving them tools, the reading tools, the thinking tools, the analysis tools, the inspirational tools, the appreciation tools. When they have all of this, then they can continue growing themselves. Because there is no teacher, there's no Mora, there's no Rebbe, there's no Rosh Yeshiva who can take the responsibility to say, I am going to lead this individual for the entirety of his life. It's absurd, ridiculous, and very impractical. From just push it from a push it to simple lifespan cheshbon. But what it is giving him or her the tools that they can constantly grow themselves in Torah. The Torah is infinite. This learning is a lifetime commitment and process. We never achieve the fullest understanding because it's infinite, but to give them the tools to be able to do it. So that's what I would say is a broad but important definition of chinuch. I would like to just mention one other thing, and that is that if you wanted to summarize what we have to get on a more direct level in order to accomplish this umnes she'osid lamed boy. So we say every morning, it's in the Birchas Kriyashma, Emes v'yatziv v'nochon v'kayom v'yoshor, that the Torah is true, it's straight, it's kayom, it's firm. And then we say v'nechmod v'ohu v'ohu v'choviv v'noyim 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 v' whatever, you know. I did daven this morning, but anyway. So the Teva Yofet, that's the end of that thing. 15 praises of what the Torah is, and they fall into two categories: the truth and the good. It's beautiful, it's meaningful, it's inspiring, it's precious, it's delicious, and it's true, and it's real, and it's kayom, and it's the ultimate reality. And in a practical sense, those are two messages that we must convey to our Talmidim and Talmidos at all times: the truth of Torah and the benefits of it, the good that's going to be for them, how it's going to help them, how it's going to make their lives happier, how it's going to enhance the quality of their lives, both in a global sense of mitzvahs and individual sense of the individual acts that are expected of them, that they're expected to perform. Okay, that's by way of introduction. I'd like to talk about today this one topic of relationship with Hashem. And I would like to suggest of what primary, fundamental, foundational importance that this has. The Gemara in Shabbos, I believe it's Lamed Aleph, records the famous story of the Goy that came to Hillel to teach him Kol HaTorah Kula Al Regel Achas. He says, as I stand on one foot, please teach me the whole Torah. Very big chutzpah and very ambitious undertaking. And he told him one phrase: Mada luchsani lechavruch loisavid, ze kol ha-Torah kulo, ve'idoch pirusho, zil gmor. That which to you is hateful, don't do to your friend. This is the whole Torah, the rest is now just explanation, now go and study. Very simple. Rashi has two pshotim in this maimer that Hillel said to the Goy. The second pshat that he says is that since the majority of the mitzvahs of the Torah are beinolam lechaveroi, therefore he told him, "Mada lochsari, that which is hateful for you, don't do to your friend." If you get this idea of treating another human being as you would want to be treated yourself, that really encompasses a maybe the majority of what the Torah talks about, and that's a real foundation. But Rashi in the first pshat says something else. He quotes a pasuk in Mishlei: Re'acho v'rei ovicho al tazoiv. Your friend and the friend of your father, don't forsake him. And Rashi says that what chavercho means is, that's HaKadosh Baruch Hu. That which to you is hateful, don't do to HaKadosh Baruch Hu. This is the whole Torah. The rest is only explanation. Now go and study it. And he explains the idea that the connection to HaKadosh Baruch Hu, just as we know the pain of a friend that hurts us, that goes against us, that betrays us, that's just the way we can't betray HaKadosh Baruch Hu. We have to connect with HaKadosh Baruch Hu and maintain that ongoing relationship. That's really what Kol HaTorah Kula is about. The Iduch Pirusha. The rest is Pirush. So it seems that this issue of relationship with HaKadosh Baruch Hu was, in Hillel's opinion, the one concept that he could give this Goy while he was standing on Regel Achas. So it must be, and it by his words itself, it is of paramount importance. So that's what we would like to discuss today as much as we can possibly get in. Now, it's poshut that this relationship with HaKadosh Baruch Hu impacts everything in our lives. If I have a positive relationship with Hashem, then I want to daven. I want to study His Torah because these are His messages, these are His directives, this is his message that He sends to me. That's one. I want to do His mitzvahs because HaKadosh Baruch Hu, I love Him, I appreciate Him. We have this tight relationship, and therefore, whatever He says, I certainly want to satisfy His will. The Sipurno defines love as in the Hakdomah to Shir Hashirim, Sheyismach Ha'oyhei B'malas HaNeav U'Hasigu Ritzoinui. He says that the one who loves someone will rejoices in the qualities that that person has. We love qualities, and I want to do your bidding. I want to satisfy your desires. That's if I love. So if we have a loving relationship with HaKadosh Baruch Hu, we want to do everything He tells us to do. Add to that the fact that everything He tells us to do is just for our benefit. Another discussion which we should have at some point, that all of the mitzvahs and all of the praising and everything that we say and that we do is all for our benefit. HaKadosh Baruch Hu doesn't need our praises. HaKadosh Baruch Hu doesn't need our mitzvahs. He doesn't need us to serve Him. Eved Hashem, Avodas Hashem. Oh, He needs servants. He needs korbanos in the morning because he's hungry for breakfast. He needs a tov b'shabein or abayim to have a dinner in the evening of korban Pesach, because there are Pesach, he can have matzah or bread, so he gets hungry, so therefore he needs to have the psar korban Pesach. Nonsense. Doesn't need anything. It's all, everything he's asking us to do, and everything we want to do because we love him and he loves us, and we want to maintain and not to disappoint or undermine that relationship. It's all for our benefit. So it's very strong motivation, and it really permeates this relationship idea, everything. It also is a major factor in coping with the challenges of life. A person who has a relationship with Hashem has the ability to cope with the things that we should all never know from, because that gives him the strength. I know Hashem loves me. I know he's in control. We got this tight relationship. So something very important is going on here, even though it's beyond me to figure out what it is. So it really permeates everything that we do, and is therefore a very critical element. Okay, how do we go about it? Okay, we want to... I was once at a meeting of Mechanchim, and I was speaking. I'm only doing this for the drama, it's not really very nice. And I felt like Avraham Avinu. Avraham Avinu, what do I have in common with Avraham Avinu? He introduced Hashem into the world. I felt that I was introducing Hashem into the world. What? Something's wrong. No, because we sort of marginalized him. We have mitzvahs, we have learning, we're committed to be mechanech the next generation, we sacrifice, we're moiser nefesh sometimes. But do we have that shivisi Hashem lenegdi somit? Is it really all about Hashem? Is it really all about our relationship with Hashem? Or has it become so mechanical? Has it become so habitual? Has it become so much that we do it mitzvah hanoshim lumoda, that sort of, you know, even davening, you know, we daven, but and of course I'm praying to Hashem, but like, am I thinking about Hashem? I don't know. Chaim Soloveitchik learns pshat in the Rambam that the kavona that you're oim b'lifnei Hashem is me'akev in the whole Shmoneh Esrei. The kavonas that are only for the first broch and for moedim are only kavonas pirush amilas, the second shir for Reb Chaim in the Reb Chaim Levi al Rambam. But the kavon of dalef ne miyato imit, person has to be constantly aware. And shivisi Hashem lanegdi somit. So this is a reality that we must reintroduce to the lives of our talmidim, not to mention that maybe we ourselves could be mechazik ourselves in that. And there's many ways to do that, and that's really what we have to talk about. The first thing, and by the way, we have here, we're giving out a... I learned over many years, don't give anything out until it's over, otherwise your audience becomes more interested in what you gave them to read than what you have to say. Here will be an outline of this whole presentation. So that could be helpful to anyone who wants. And this is something that's become extremely popular. People are downloading it from our website. And it's just a Chinuch companion. It's just some of the basic ideas that are critical for Chinuch. It's a brief discussion, but people, this refer them to other information that we have on the website, and they could do more intensive research. I'm going to leave you with both of these. Okay. The classroom. It's very important that our children hear about Hashem, that we talk about Hashem, that we... It's part of the conversation. And sometimes we can take it for granted. I just want to convey how serious it is, and how much, as much as we may think we're doing it, because who commanded us the business? That's Hashem. Whose Torah is this? That's Hashem. I said Birchas HaTorah in the morning. Boch HaBor, we call Nosan Lamos Terosu. But after that, I got so caught up in the Avodas Hashem that I can even forget about who am I serving. I once spoke in a yeshiva, a very fine Beis Medrash, for about 45 minutes. And a young man came over to me and said, he says, you know, I heard you mention Hashem more times in this one speech than in the last 4 months in the yeshiva. You know, that was because that was 4 months into this month. Who knows what would happen if the speech was at the end of this month. So it's a real issue. We must address that. And the classroom has to be permeated with the spirit of Hashem. You know, off the record, I think the Goya may do a better job at that. We're bringing in the spirit of the Lord into the classroom. We have to do that. We have to do that. That's what we need. It's all about Hashem's Torah. It's a, you know, I'm not suggesting this by any means, but Rabbi Yitzchok Petterberger, the Rabbi Yitzchok Blaser, one of the Talmidei Mufokim of Rabbi Yisrael Salanta, they say that when he learned Gemara, he said, Omer Abaye, Vozokt Abaye Ad Rabbeinu Shel Olam Zokt. What does Abaye say that Hashem says? To remind himself constantly that this is a Torah Hashem. Please don't do that, because they'll laugh you out of the classroom and maybe out of the school. But the idea is there. We have to be. It has to become part of our language. Okay. Two, we have to model a relationship with Hashem. A relationship with Hashem transforms human interaction and elevates it to a different plane. Somebody does something that's inappropriate, or something happens that's very painful, or some challenge is there that's overwhelming. If we are capable of modeling calm, cool, and collected, because, as I love to share with groups, a secret, and I whisper it when I say it, there's a God in the world. If we can show that that's what we feel. And if I get hurt, if I'm insulted, you know, that means that I was supposed to be insulted. That doesn't mean the student can't be disciplined. But, and you got to be careful about that, but that's another discussion. By the way, I don't know if there are many shroshim in the English language, but the shirish of discipline is disciple. It's to teach a lesson. It's not to punish. That's what discipline is. It's lessons. You want them to learn, to be disciples, to be students. Anyway, but on the other hand, I'm not bent out of shape. I'm not vindictive. I'm not broken by it, because everything's Hashem. Hashem's in control of the world. I have a challenge. All of a sudden, there's a deadline, and the principal comes in, and this must be ready, we must finish this, and we have a curriculum to finish. What are you getting all excited about? There's a God in the world. We have to model that constantly. Nothing phases us, because Hashem is in control. And Hashem is the loving, benevolent, caring, kind, merciful, generous Father in heaven who takes care of us. And something that we have to be able to show, to live it. I want to tell you a horror story. Don't get scared. No, but a horror story that I just heard the other day. I heard of a third grader, not in this school, or Hashem, but a third grader who stopped keeping Shabbos because his Rebbe preached, taught something, and didn't practice it in his own life. By the fifth grade now, I think he's getting back on track. Somebody had some good influence on him over this summer. But imagine that. We teach. We teach about Hashem. We teach Hashem's Torah. We give lessons. We'll tell them, we may even tell them that, you know, that you shouldn't, when somebody hurts you, you really should calm, that you should be neikim v'neiter, because in reality you were supposed to get that from Hashem, you needed that, and this person was just the agent that chose to do it, so that mitigates it somewhat. We teach that. But then, when push comes to shove, and it's lamaisa, you're all frazzled, all bent out of shape. We're not practicing what we're preaching. So I think this is very important to model to whatever extent that we can our relationship. We talk about bitochen. We have to show it. It has to become real. They have to see that we mean it. You know, just when it talks about modeling, there's a beautiful model of this that I have in mind. Reb Elia Lapian, who was the Mashkiach in Kfar Hasidim, came to Yerushalayim to give a Musa Shmuz. And the Shmuz was scheduled on a certain topic for 8 o'clock. He arrived at 7:30, and he told the one who was organizing it that he can't speak today because he came late. So the guy looked at him and said, what are you talking about? You have a half hour yet. You came a half hour early. He says, no. He says, before I speak about any issue, I spend 1 hour working on myself to make sure that I have refined myself, my character in that issue. And since I only have a half hour, I can't do it. And he refused to speak. He didn't speak. That's a kelimah. They have that discipline, you know. They have that. But anyway, but that's what happens. So it's very important in whatever way possible that we can model, we have to do it. Now, who is Hashem? Hashem. Oh, we know Hashem is here, Hashem is there, Hashem is truly everywhere. But who is he? And many people are perplexed about this. You know, a little kid says, Hashem, wow. But you're a little older, like, where is he? Oh, he's in Shemayim. No, he's here. He's there. He's everywhere. Oh. I don't see him. Do you? And as they grow up, they begin, like, and then I talk to him. But he doesn't talk back. I don't know. Now, the truth of the matter is, there's a beautiful mimer from I Can't Figure Out Who. It goes from a Godel B'Yisrael to a conservative rabbi. I'm not sure who. I heard many versions. But it says, when I pray, I talk to Hashem. When I study Torah, Hashem talks to me. But really, who is he? Where is he? What is he? We have to be able to describe Hashem. Oh, how do you do that? How is Hashem known? How do we identify Hashem? He's known only b'midoisof. Mahu rachum mafato rachum. Rachum v'chanun. Erech ha'payim v'rav chesed v'emes noitze chesed v'alofim noitze ovum v'fesh v'chato v'nake. And infinitely more and greater and deeper and more wide-ranging midas. And this, we have to know Hashem. So they have to know about Hashem. They will not see him, neither do we. He will not speak to them, most likely. It's a good bet, but if they understand who he is, he's involved, he's loving, he's caring, he's forgiving, he's patient, he's forever truthful and just and involved in our lives in an intimate way. The more that we can describe who HaKadosh Baruch Hu is, the more that our students will be able to relate with him. Now, especially if we can describe who he is, and we can make that part of the relationship. For example, if I know he loves me, I know he loves me. Oh, that's very good. Now, I don't know who he is exactly, but I know there's a being out there that loves me. That sort of, you have they used to have a thing where they you have a picture, and you have to guess. Most of it is covered, and there's just one little bit showing, and you have to guess what the animal is. And then if you guess this, then they a little bit more. By each meter, we get a little bit, Havdil. By each meter, we get a little bit closer. Oh, he's loving. He's merciful. Merciful means that when he sees us in pain or suffering, he feels bad. You know, Ima Anoichi Betzora. He's Mole Rachamim. Oh, Chesed, that's what he does. Neisei Ovan v'feshev v'chato, very important. He's constantly forgiving our shortcomings. V'nake, the Bali Musa like to say, v'nake is like niku yavesh, that he removes it. You know, if you wash something, sometimes it leaves a vague stain. But dry cleaning with all the chemicals, that removes it completely. Kodesh Baruch Hu removes, this is who he is. So now, even though I can't see him, and even though I can't, he doesn't talk to me, but I have a concept of what I'm dealing with. But if it just remains Hashem, we don't even say his name. We say Hashem, the name. So we have to bring him closer. And then we have the definition of Hashem. He's the Adonai HaKol. We have to know he's the master of all. He controls everything. By the way, there's a beautiful, beautiful tefillah that maybe we say, I don't know. I don't know if we spend the time explaining it. Adonai Olam. Adonai Olam is just describing HaKadosh Baruch Hu. And after this massive description, V'hu Keli, V'chai Goyali, V'tzur Chevli, then we talk about he's my God and we have that relationship. So this is something that maybe studying that together gives him a certain sense who he was Asher Melech B'Terem, he was the Melech before, and then once people were created they called him Melech, and after everything will be done he'll still be the Melech. All of this very, very important to be finding every opportunity, and I don't have to tell you, as gifted and talented and experienced machanchim and machanchois, that this shouldn't be done in a lecture form. Because lectures today, look who's talking, lectures today are, they say that the window of concentration for most, let's say children, adults are better, is about 3 minutes maximum, you know, after everything they're used to. So, but a word here, a word there, every time in a pusuk, every time, every conversation, always to show Hashem's involvement, Hashem's involvement, this meter, that meter, the other meter, giving them a sense of who he is. Okay. Part of that, and very helpful in that, is the role of Hashgacha Pratis. Hashgacha Pratis may be the key to a relationship with Hashem, to lahagshim, to materialize that relationship in a real sense, to bring it out, to bring it alive, and to make it very personal. So this is something that's, I think of a story that took place in one of the schools in this community many, many years ago. Someone had the idea to promote Hashgacha Pratis by offering $100, this must have been 30 years ago, that was a lot of money, for the best personal or familial story about Hashgacha Pratis. Those days, we didn't talk about off the derech. Those days we had yeshiva bums. That was the terminology, you know, about 30, 40 years ago. The bum, you know, he's there, he's okay, he does a little bit, whatever. They don't throw him out. Those days didn't throw too many people out. But he's the bum. Anyway, so we had this contest, and this guy won. It changed his life. What happened? Some people may even know it's somebody in the local community. He says in 1944... when the Nazis were about to invade Budapest, his grandparents had to make a decision, a life and death decision, to go into hiding or to leave the country. Now, they figured hiding was not too safe. The Nazis were very good at ferreting out Jews wherever they were. But they had a problem. In those days, you needed a transit visa to go from one country to the next. They had a visa, they had a passport, they had money, they had whatever they needed, but they didn't have a transit visa. So they wouldn't be able to get to the Hungarian border, they're not going to be able to cross. But they decided they're going anyway. They're going, they're getting on the train. There was a I think a mother, father, and four boys, four little kids, and they're going. They're sitting there, everything is fine, they're traveling all the way to the border. All of a sudden, the train screeches into the border, stops. Border guards come on to check everybody's papers. Now what? Obviously they're going to send them back home, and they accomplished nothing except wasted some more time traveling. As right before the border guard, he's right over here, he's next to their compartment, an old man, and I spoke to these brothers who were today older gentlemen, you know, a long man with a white beard, that's what they remember, sat down next to them. The guard comes by, the old man pulls out papers, shows it to the guard. The guard looks at the papers, looks at the family, gives the old man back the papers, moves on to the next compartment, and the whole family is here today to tell the story. This kid was so taken by God's involvement in his life that it transformed his upstanding balabos of this community today. I didn't say too much. Anyway, but he was so taken by the fact, I'm here today, I'm alive today because of this Hashgacha Pratis, because Hashem gets involved with personal things, with a personal family, in a miraculous way. They could swear this is Eliyahu HaNavi, but I don't know about that. But anyway, that's what they tell me. It must have been Eliyahu HaNavi. But this is the power. Introducing them to Hashgacha Pratis is so, so powerful. It introduces a relationship with Hashem because he's working for me. It gives a concept of who Hashem is because he does chesed and rachamim and he's involved. It's personal. It's personal. He takes care of me. He's involved in my life. He does for me. Wow. Now, I want to suggest something else, too. Many people are afraid of Hashgacha Pratis. They're afraid to talk about it because they feel that sometimes the kids will say, that happened this time, happened to you, happened to everybody. I don't see this stuff in my life. And I would like to advise and suggest, based on a lot of experience, that when you introduce them to Hashgacha Pratis, they will discover in their lives some of the most amazing things. There was a young man in the yeshiva, Beis Medrash, who told me, and he's very committed, very good in learning, very bright. He says, there's no feeling. I don't have the feeling. It's not, the emotional piece is missing. So, I don't know, hit me. I said, I want you to come back tomorrow with three personal stories of Hashgacha Pratis. That happened to you. And he said, no. Anyway, he came back with three beautiful stories the next day. And you could sense the difference. You could sense the difference in him because, I didn't notice it. You know, because he keeps so quiet, he doesn't talk, he doesn't show me who he is, he doesn't send me a WhatsApp with a picture on it, But he's involved in my life. And what we do have is, I know some of my daughters do it in their teaching, that they talk about Hashgacha Pratis and kids bring in stories. I mean, some of them are a little juvenile, I was walking along and I didn't stub my toe. Okay, but there's so much that's I didn't realize. And my mother told me this, and my parents should have came about like this. And these are things that I know from a very personal level that I believe that my family, my children, I can trace, it's very interesting, the strength that they have today to one story. It actually happened to a mother of one of the people sitting in this room. Yeah. One story. Yeah, just one story. What happened? We had come to the San Fernando Valley, that's a suburb of Los Angeles, a very unlikely place to make a yeshiva. It was like as far away as you can get from Yiddishkeit. That's all the people that ran away from New York to Los Angeles and found the Los Angeles too religious, which wasn't, came to the valley. So we moved there. We make yeshiva there. It wasn't a very wealthy community. It wasn't a very welcoming community when they found out what our mission truly was. You know, we weren't there just to teach them how to sing Hatikva or to learn Parshat HaShavua and a little bit of Ivrit. So, it was rough. My daughter was about 8 years old at the time. She was in a day camp in the summer, and she was going on a trip the next day. At about 10:30 at night, she says, I need 75 cents because I want to buy a soda. It's very hot in L.A., and it's fun. And her poor father didn't have 75 cents. So I told her, and she said, what should I do? I said, you should say Tehillim. I don't think she thought it was such a bright idea, but what do you want from an 8-year-old kid, you know? Okay, she sits down with her younger sister, who was maybe 4 years old at the time, something like that, and she's saying Tehillim. A little bit later, she comes to me, she says, I don't get it. It's 10:30 at night, I have to leave at 7:30 in the morning, you don't have the money. What's going to happen? The little kid mumbles something about maybe somebody give you. I didn't know what she was talking about. Anyway, she goes without the money. She comes back with a story. A friend of hers, living in the city 10 miles away, wakes up that morning and says, I borrowed 75 cents from the Cohen kid at the Purim carnival. That's 4 months before. And I never gave it back. They never talked about it. They never thought about it. They completely forgot about it. She wakes up, she brings the money to camp, she hands it to my daughter. I owe you 75 cents. What my children learned from that story, first and foremost, Hashem cares even about 75 cents. You know, you think, oh, he owes, he get involved with global issues. No, 75 cents, little kid. Secondly, Tehillim, tefillah helps. Thirdly, what does Hashem do? He takes the tefillah of this young little girl in the valley, and he sends a message 10 miles away to this friend who for 4 months they never even thought about this, who wakes up in the morning and all of a sudden, I mean, it's so absurd. She remembers, oh, I owe 75 cents. I believe that this story was foundational in my family and my children being able to see more and more Hashgacha. Because it's real. It could be petty, it could be big, it could be 10 miles away. Oh, and tefillah helps, talking to Hashem helps, and Hashem Taka responds, and it was so. Anyway, this is the kind of thing that we have to make part of the classroom. It's a critical ingredient. Tell me one more story, just to make the point. It was the Erev Pesach. Many, many years ago, in the 60s, I was in Eretz Yisrael riding on the bus in Meir Shorim, going through that very narrow street where I don't think they let buses there anymore. Maybe they do, but I don't know how they used to do it then. And there's a little old lady, mamish, very small, very short, carrying a sack of potatoes almost as big as she was and getting off the bus. So I was a young yeshiva kid, you know, I said, okay, I'm going to help her get her off the bus. I took the sack of potatoes and thought, okay. Then I realized she doesn't live at the bus stop. So I have to help her schlep it to her house because. So I schlepped it into Meir Shorim, and she lives in this one-room apartment. She was an almona. And she says, I feel so bad. It's Erev Pesach. I have nothing to give you. But I want to tell you a story. So she asked me, she says, do you know Binyamin Zilber? Binyamin Tzadik, she called him, that's right. So I happened to know, I knew who she was talking about. He says, this bocher comes to me, this is obviously many years ago, and he says, the Chazon Ish sent me to you, and he says, you have my basher tzivik. That's it. She panicked. She says, I never had children. I don't know what you're talking about. The Chazon Ish, she didn't know what to do. She says, come back tomorrow. You know, that's what we do. We push it off if we can't deal with it. Come back tomorrow. She runs to the kosel. This is before 48, and she's standing there davening. The Chazon Ish said to himself, looks to her side, and she sees a woman there standing, also davening, crying a little bit, or maybe a lot. She says, "What are you davening for? What are you crying about?" "I have a daughter, such a wonderful daughter." That was the shidduch. That's it. Hashem runs the world. Everything is bashkocha. When we hear today shidduch crisis, we don't hear about Hashem. When we hear today about financial markets, we don't hear about Hashem. When we hear about politics, we don't hear about Hashem. We look at everything as if it was teva. That's not teva to come to the kosel at that particular moment exactly and stand right next to a woman who has the basherta that the Chazon Ish sent this kid to you and told you that he has it. We can see the Yad Hashem. This is what we have to do. It's a very, very important ingredient. Okay, let's continue. Pasuk says, "Kimayim haponim el ponim, kein leva odom el odom." There's a reflection of emotions from one to another. If I feel a certain way towards someone, then that person starts to feel that same way to me. And there's many, many stories that could be told where you see this does amazing things. if we, and according to the Vilna Goin, you don't, it's not psychological. It's not because you see the way the person is talking to you that they like you. It's push it without knowledge. It's just, it's something mystical. When somebody thinks positive of you, it evokes that. If we can teach our Talmidim and Talmidois that Hashem loves them, then all of a sudden that will engender that reciprocal relationship. Kimayim atoshleim ha-melech promised us. Kimayim aponim elponim kein leva odom ele odom. So it's so important to educate. Yes, Hashem loves, Hashem loves, Hashem loves. It can have so many amazing effects. And there's something else. I can't suggest that you should be teaching here Shir HaShirim. First of all, no one asked me to address your curriculum needs. That's not, I'm out of place if I do that. But besides that, I'm not sure it's practical with young children, even junior high school children, although I have done it with high school seniors. But it's very powerful. The moshel, of course, is a very sensual moshel. It has to do with the love between a husband and a wife, a chosen and a kalo, and the estrangement and the coming together again. And there are some descriptions there that are very, very graphic. I believe that's why Chazal say that you're not allowed to make a song from Shir HaShirim. I don't think they meant songs that speak of Dveikus Bashem, but rather songs that use the text in a, like a love song, you know, and that type of thing, a Divrei Cheshik, a Divrei Chol, because some of the words are so amazing. But the concept, if you look at Rashi in his Hakdoma, and you just read through the Psukim, you see that it describes the loving relationship that exists between HaKadosh Baruch Hu and Klal Yisrael in the long and bitter Golus. Shleima HaMelech, Rashi says in Akdoma, prophesied that when we will be in Golus, through the entirety of the Golus, that relationship will still be alive and well. HaKadosh Baruch Hu is Mashkiach Menachaloinois, Meitzitz Menacharakim, peeping through the peepholes, looking through the one-way window, I assume, like to make a mechitza like that, looking in, we don't see him, but he sees us. He makes sure everything, he's taking care of everything, he's in control of everything, and he loves us. And it describes the love that he has. It describes the way he looks at Rishoyim with love. It describes in one place, I don't want to get into it now, we don't have the time, but it almost describes an uncontrollable type of love, Kavi Yochol, a dugma Chazal we're giving to HaKadosh Baruch Hu's love and our love for him. No matter what you're going to take from me, I'm not going to forego my love of Hashem. And it's very important if we can teach them this. See, what happens is like this. We have many things deeply buried within us, but if nobody brings them to the fore, we don't even know that they're there. If we teach our students that there is Hashem loves us, and Kemayim Aponim, and then we love him, and Shleima HaMelech Bechochom Yikol Odom prophesied that even in the Vaita Golus, when Hashem will only be Behester Ponim and Mashkiach Menachaloinois, and so forth and so on, but our love is still there. That relationship is still there. In fact, there's a Zohar that says, you know, Rashi says in the beginning of Shir HaShirim, L'hoi Odom Kedai Kiyom Shinitin Bo Shir HaShirim. The world was never as worthy as the day Shir HaShirim was given. And the day Shir HaShirim was given, Chazal tell us, was the day that Shlomo HaMelech completed the Beis HaMikdosh. And that was like a shir that Shlomo wrote that describes the relationship between Hashem and the Klal Yisrael. The Beis HaMikdosh was like the capstone of creation. Now there's a place, Mokom HaShiras HaShchino, Vosli Mikdosh V'Shochanti B'Seichom. Wow, we really, now we've come full cycle. And they made this Shir HaShirim. So one of my children asked the question. They said, Shir HaShirim describes the estrangement between Klal Yisrael and HaKadosh Baruch Hu. Yes, it describes the coming back and the love that exists, but why go into estrangement? This is the moment of the Binyan Beis HaMikdash. This is the moment of reaching the sea, the tachlis of the Bria. And you could talk about, oh, yeah, but you know, then we had bad relationship, and we did something inappropriate to each other, the whole business threw you out. Why? He said, very good. What's the ultimate test of a relationship? The resilience of the relationship. If a relationship can sour and still has the power to restore itself to its original depth and glory and maybe beyond, that's the testimony to a true relationship. And that's what Shir HaShirim teaches. And we have to realize that too, that even though we're far away, and even though our students have maybe forgotten about the extent of Hashem's love and the relationship that we have, but from the distance in which we feel, they can come back even further, because that is actually part of the relationship. The relationship is always there. In an aside, I would just like to mention something. You know, many people look to blame anything and everything other than themselves. It's a natural human emotion. You know, this is the problem. That's the problem. Everything's a problem except for me. You know, how do they say that? The famous joke or something, there were 10,000 soldiers walking and coming back in victory, and the mothers were standing there on the side, and this, and she sees her son. He's out of step. Everyone's out of step except my son John. You know, everybody else. It's not me. So I said, but the truth of the matter is that it's not so poshut, you know. And if we have the if we're willing to consider the possibility that maybe there's something we could do and not blame the outside world, sometimes it might be much more constructive. One of the not so much today, it's the internet, it's the outside influences, it's all that. A few years ago it was materialism. Everybody was like, materialism, this luxury materialism, this the fancy. Oh, did I go to a wedding last night? It's maybe called the wedding of the century. You know, but anyway, I had one of the flower displays, just one. I could probably cover my budget for a few months. You know, and you know, that, but you know something? That's not really the problem. That's not really the problem. Because that's just like an excuse and a cop out. The problem is that we haven't addressed the internals enough. If the passion, if the appreciation, if the connection with HaKadosh Baruch Hu would be more acute, then these things would be less of an influence. Not that they'd be great, and not that they wouldn't have negative influence, but let's say the internet. A person who is deeply connected to HaKadosh Baruch Hu will do everything possible to filter and to. I have in the yeshiva, I have two iPads sitting in my safe. And the guy has to transfer money or something, so he comes in and he takes it. But they don't want to have it where they're filtered. Also, they don't want the temptation. A person who's motivated will do more to avoid the temptation. But if we're not motivated, I love to tell a story. I actually had the opportunity to speak at the first Asifa that they had about the internet, many years before this Citi Field and whatever, in Miami it was. And I don't remember what I spoke, but I told the following story. I'm not sure that ever happened, but it's the point. A secular Jew and a Yerushalmi with the full garb were walking opposite each other in a street on Haifa. And as they were just about crossing each other's paths, they both noticed in a display window some very inappropriate displays. And in the quickest motion, the Yerushalmi goes like this, so as not to look at it. This secular Jew, this Chiloni, was so taken by what he saw, he walks up to him and he says, "Could you tell me, what is it in your life that's so meaningful, that's so fulfilling, that's so precious to you, that you won't sacrifice even a moment of it for a pleasure which to all of us is so real and so enjoyable?" That's where we have to go. That's where we have to go. The ruchnius, the connection to HaKadosh Baruch Hu, the appreciation of Torah and mitzvahs, the goals of our chinuch system have to be so deeply entrenched within them that they will do everything possible to avoid any interference, to avoid any distraction, to avoid any competition, to avoid anything that might undermine that commitment that they have. Okay, let's move on. Tefillah is a big problem. I hear from machanchim, machanchos all the time that tefillah is a problem. Too many words, they don't know what it means, it takes too long, it's annoying. I talk to him, he doesn't answer me anyway, it's a one-way conversation, why does he need so much praise? You know, was he has an ego problem? All of these things. And of course, the first you saw it is what I alluded to before. I once was in a school, in a community, someplace out of town, and the head of the local girls' school comes to me and says, I have a girl in the 12th grade who has a question, very difficult, I couldn't answer her, and could you please talk to her? Okay. I figured, who knows what's awaiting me. Why does Hashem need so much praise? Well, she has an ego problem. Now, my problem was, by the way, not her question. My problem was why the Menahelis couldn't answer the question. But that's besides the point. But obviously, Hashem doesn't need any praise. In fact, this is a beautiful room we're in right now. But imagine the Queen of England walked in here, and we said, welcome, Queen of this Beis Medrash. Now, to us, this Beis Medrash may be worth more than the whole British Empire, but certainly not to the Queen of England. So, Queen of Beis Medrash, what are you talking about? I'm not the Queen of this. I'm the Queen of the British Commonwealth of Nations. We span the globe. Any praise that we could say of Hashem is an insult. The level that we understand of it, as deep as it may go, is really insulting because it's minuscule compared to who He really is. But He allows us and encourages us to do it because it elevates us. Because we get a deeper appreciation. Every praise that we utter of Hashem becomes a lesson to us in who He is and how to connect with Him because we appreciate His greatness, His kindness, His mechalkel chayim b'chesed b'chayim esim semech neiflim reifei choylim matir asurim and nicho moicho midei meloch. All of this elevates us. And that's something that they certainly have to understand. But it goes more than that. I think that it is important to know what the words mean. That's true. I think Art Scroll has helped us a lot in that. Instead of the old-fashioned translation, blessed art thou, and nobody knew who art and thou was. But, you know, Baruch Atah Hashem, they make it easier. I don't know exactly what they say, but it's a little bit more in modern English. But that's not enough. They could know what all the words mean and have no shaychus to the feeling. Have no shaychus to the... First of all, they have to know tefillah is avodah shebelev. Well, the Ovdu B'chol of Avchem, Ezu He, the Sifri says, Avoyde Shebelev, Zu Tfilo. Ad Kedei Kach, that Tfilo, Shema, Birchas HaMozein, Brochus, that you don't articulate by saying the words at least enough to hear, that you can't be, you're not Yotze, if hearer is not Kedibur. It's a machloikis where the hearer is like Dibur. By Shemone Esrei, that's not even a Shai. The Mishnah Berurah doesn't even bring hearer Kedibur or not. Because it's not a Din Dibur. It's from the heart. So you have to know this is Avodah Shebelev. This is from the heart. And there are so many opportunities for heartfelt tefillah. The Chayei Odom writes in a Tzavor that we should, at the end of Shemone Esrei, before we say Aseh Laman Shemecho, we should include a tefillah for something that we want in whatever language we speak. And that is going to be Avodah Shebelev. That comes from the heart. Because the general tefillahs, or maybe by rote, the general tefillahs I may not be paying attention to, I know them by heart, I say it so many times, and general tefillahs are about the Rabbi, maybe I don't feel that so personally, but here, I'm asking, I want, please, give me a new bicycle, or whatever today they ask for, I guess nobody asks for bicycles anymore today, but I'll tell you something else, don't be afraid to teach your students about asking Hashem for something. Many people are. If I could turn this group, some in favor of me and some against me, I would recall an incident that took place in Chicago. I gave a session like this, discussing tefillah, to a group of machanchim and machanchis. The women, I think, were sitting over there. The men were sitting like an L shape over here. And the women were like, wow, of course, and this. And the men were very skeptical, bordering on cynical, about how could you tell your kids to daven because you know maybe they won't be answered, and then what? And I was young, and a little bit out of line. I mean, I'm still out of line, but I'm certainly not young. And I turned to the man and said, Aboisai, it looks to me like you guys don't believe in this tefillah business so much. So, but I'm not saying that to you, okay? But it's like, what? We shouldn't be afraid. Hashem answers tefillah. And they have to be educated, though, that the answer, I don't like, for example, some people say, I don't like. Sometimes the answer is no. That's not very appealing to young people. It's not very, very appealing to us either. But I'd rather say sometimes the answer is not now. Not yet. Sometimes we have to educate them. Shakodesh Boruch Hu mis'ave l'tfilosan shel tzadikim. Sarah waited 90 years until she had a child. Imagine how many tefillos. And Chazal say why? HaKadosh Baruch Hu mis'ave l'tfilos. He craves it. Now again, Hashem has no cravings. That's axiomatic. He has no human traits or tendencies whatsoever. But he craves it, kaviyochol, because it's beneficial for us. We come closer and closer. 90 years. Now I, if I was designing the world, I would have designed it differently. I have a different design. Let's see if mine makes sense or not. I would say, give her 60 years. Let her have a child. And she'll spend 30 years saying Hallel. Good idea, right? Hallel. Ooh, Hallel. Hezul Hashem ki tov ki lelam chasnei. Wow, that's so inspiring. It is. I'll bring you close to Hashem. If the goal is Kodesh Baruch Hu Mis'aveh, and he wants you to have a connection, that you should be connected, that would be very grand. And Yitzchak would have been born 30 years earlier. Now, of course, with Thore Meinu, I don't mean to insinuate. This is just to bring out the point. But let's talk about us. What's the difference between Tefillah and Hallel? I would suggest as follows. When we're in need, we pour out our heart with passion, with feeling, with tears. When the need has been resolved, we say Hallel. But oftentimes, the first week we say the whole Hallel. The second week we say half Hallel. The third week we say Hoidu. The fourth week we say Shkoyach. And the fifth week we forgot about it altogether. That's the nature of the beast. But when we're in need, it brings us closer. So they have to understand that sometimes Hashem wants that connection, that you should connect with Him. And by the way, they have to understand, tefillah is an amazing system because we use our material desires to connect to Hashem. I want money. I want health. I want a shidduch. I want this. I want that. My material desires, not my spiritual. And I ask Hashem for that. That means I'm kolat moise termano. I'm connecting to Hashem, not just with my neshama, but with my goof, with my goofniestika needs, with the things that I want on a material level. That's there. So they have to understand that sometimes Hashem wants to bring them closer and closer. Sometimes Hashem knows that the thing you're asking for is really not what you should get, at least not right now. I want a new bicycle. Well, Hashem knows if you're going to take that bicycle, you're going to ride on Peninsula Boulevard, a truck is going to turn in when the light, before the light changed, and there, goodbye. You didn't know that. But Hashem knew that. So they have to understand, once they have a baseline of Hashem's chesed and caring and love, then they can understand that, yes, He wants our tefillos, He's mesaveh letefillos and shel tzadikim, He's the shemeya tefillah, He's the mekabel tefillos, but He has insight. You know, how about the guy who prayed for this deal to go through? This is the biggest deal of his life. It went through and it brought him bankruptcy. Whereas another guy, no, I know you don't want the deal. You want the results. The results you're only going to get from something else. So once we teach them this, and they have a baseline of appreciating Hashem with His chesed, with His love, then we shouldn't be afraid to tell it to Davin. And how many kids will come and tell you, oh, there's a story that happened a few years ago. My daughter told me this, if I could reconstruct it properly. If not, maybe I'll get some help from the audience. And that's you. She's not paying attention. Anyway. okay. Anyway. Yeah. So what happened? There was a girl who was a dismally, dismally poor student. She was stupid. She didn't have the brains. and she was failing everything. It was terrible. It was such a rachmanis, and you know, people felt bad for her. They were nice to her, but and my daughter gave her a talk about Purim. It says tefillah on Purim, kol apeshit yodoi gets Hakadosh Baruch Hu. If you ask for something on Purim with all your heart, Hakadosh Baruch Hu responds. Okay, fine. That was a long time ago. Months later, weeks later, I don't know what happened. All of a sudden, one day, maybe it was after Pesach, I don't remember what she said. This girl turns around, starts asking questions, starts giving answers. She's so intelligent. She's rising to the top of the class. She's like a different person. So a teacher asks her, what happened? I was telling the conversation, but like, what happened? So she says, I remembered what you taught us about Purim. And on Purim, the whole day, I begged Hashem to make me smart. Kol apeshet yodoi. Maisa shehoyo. What's that?
Did that happen a few years ago in
Shalamas? Yeah, it happened a few years ago in Shalamas, that's right. So, anyway, so we shouldn't be a tefillah. It's a very important connection, and it's important they know the words, but they have to know what they're doing with those words. They have to understand the connection. They have to understand that sometimes Hashem even answers before they daven, because He's already prepared it all. And Hashgacha Pratis is in motion, and sometimes it happened already. If once we have that connection to Hashem, then everything else can fall into place. There's something else there's actually two other things that I think we should talk about, and then I think if we have some conversation, it might be helpful. One is bitochen. Emuna is something that has to be discussed, and how to explain it, and how to answer questions and this, but that's not the topic here today. But bitochen is the taking the basic emunah that Hashem exists, Hashem is all powerful, Hashem is all loving and kind and merciful and involved in our lives, and all of the yesodos of emunah, and internalizing it in a way that's relevant to me. He's taking care of my life. I'm relying on Him to help me with that which I want in life. To be memale mishalos libi, because I'm counting on Him. That's a very, very important topic. It's important for many reasons. Number one, it's a chesed to people, because if they can develop bitochen, they do have two benefits. One, influencing the future, because my hope that I refuse to give up, or my bitochen that I'm trusting Hashem that He's going to deliver, will have an impact on the future. The Lashon of the Meiri is dramatic. He says, HaBoteach Bashem, one who trusts Hashem, his hope that he's awaiting will not be disappointed. He won't be disappointed. Hashem responds to the Baalei Bitochen. That's one issue, and there's a lot that can be. There's books today published, there's so much on that. But there's another benefit, and that's Menuchas HaNefesh, peace of mind. There's a God in the world. He's in control. He's loving. He's caring. He's beneficent. He does chesed. He has rachamim. I don't have to worry. He's taking care of everything. It's a whole different feeling in life, and it's based on my connection to Hashem. So in terms of a relationship with HaKadosh Baruch Hu, it is very powerful in terms of...
Pastor, I was doing the session this morning in the Holy Forum. I need the clipboard back with the attendance. If you have that clipboard, please give it to me. Okay. Second, it's 11 o'clock. You have elementary school teachers have an hour for setup, and then at 12 o'clock there will be further meetings. Please check your schedule.
Okay, so I forgot where I was. I got so scared by the announcement. So bitochen. Now, it's menuchas hanefesh, because menuchas hanefesh, you know, there's different levels of bitochen. The baseline level, it seems, the Chazon Ish says, is ein mikra lefonav. There's no accidents. Hashem's in control of everything. That does not necessarily guarantee that I'm confident that He's going to give me what I want. Nor does it guarantee that this is a power to get me what I want, although on a certain level it would be, but I have such meluchas hanefesh. What am I worried about? There's no accidents. There's no accidents. It's all in control. It's a powerful, calming, soothing device. And it's also a connection to Hashem. Because of my awareness of Hashem emotionally, I start to become, I'm at peace, I'm at ease. My anxiety level drops. The stress that could kill so many people is now reduced. So that in itself, then it goes higher, then there's hope. You know, hope is very critical. I don't know for sure what's going to happen, but Chazal say, "Afilu cherev chodo munach al saborei shel odom al yimna es atzum ben alachmin." Even if a sword is sitting on the back of his neck, right there, ready to slice, don't withhold yourself from rachamim. I think that means, say, "Oh no, rachamim is impossible. So I got to find some other way, another way actually, but whatever." But no, rachamim is never impossible. Yeshua Hashem keheref ayin. I remember once a bookkeeper in the early days in the valley, there was a bookkeeper, she wasn't a religious lady, but a very bright and nice person. So in her office, I hung up a little sign, a sticker note, Yeshua Hashem keheref ayin. The Yeshua comes in the blink of an eye, and I explained to her what it means. After a couple of months, she says to me, she says, "I get it. I see it all the time. But I have a question. Why does he always blink the last minute? You know, the day of the payroll is when he blinks." So I says, "Very poshut. If he would blink a few days before, you wouldn't know that he's blinking. You think we got rich falabata, we got rich parents, we got good fundraisers, we got this, we got that. You got nothing, man. He's blinking. Wants you to know that he's blinking." And we have to introduce our students to this. It's such a connection to HaKadosh Baruch Hu. And then some of them will even be able to get to a level where they're so confident that Hashem's going to help them. And we know that it works. I have to tell you a little story. I said we're going to talk, but okay, we're almost finished. Anyway, so little story. It was a day in my years in the very lucrative business that I had in the valley. And I needed $50,000 for the next morning. And I had no clue whatsoever. But I had said a shmooze that day, the day before, about that iyun tefillah. Iyun tefillah means that when a person says, "Oh, I daven so well, so I know Hashem is going to help me because I daven well," the sultan gets involved and says, "You really think you're such a tzaddik? Let's see, you know." So the sultan is makatrik. So I said, "You know, little children's tefillah is not makatrik. There's nothing to be makatrik. They didn't do anything wrong." I got my little kids around the table, yeah, and 7:30 in the morning before they went to school, and we said to Hillel that their poor father should get his $50,000 that day. Well, I don't know what happened, but we got a Yerusha that day. Somebody decided to prepay, two parents prepay the tuition that day for the whole year. By 1 o'clock, the whole thing came together. Miraculously. I don't know from where, from what, things that I would never have expected. So, tefillahs of children is very powerful. So certainly when we're dealing with children, we should not underestimate the power of tefillah. And then there's something else. The power of tears. Chazal say, "Kol ha-shorim nina l'chutz mishari dimo." All the gates sometimes can be closed except for the gates of tears. So one of my kids pointed out, it says, "Shifti kamayim libech noichach pnei Hashem." Why, when you cry, are you noichach loshen? Noichach means I'm standing in your face, right in front of you. So you say, all the gates are closed, but the shari dima are open, you can go right in by the kisya kovet. Our kids know how to cry sometimes when they need. We shouldn't be afraid. Okay, let's just discuss one more thing and then we'll have some time for a discussion. Maybe one of the most important things that they could learn is the idea of Gadlus Odom, the greatness of the human being. We were created B'Tzelem Elokim. And in terms of this whole discussion that we had of relationship with Hashem, one of the most powerful ingredients in inspiring that relationship is I can be godly myself. Mahu Rachum, Afato Rachum. Mahu Chanun, Afato Chanun. I have the capability of refining my character in a way that makes me somewhat, at least, godly. In terms of relationship, then, I have the ability to have a better relationship. Because if I'm a cruel person and you're a kind person, we can't have much of a relationship. If I'm a pathological liar and you're an honest person, we can't have much of a relationship. But if we're of the same cloth, we're of the same ilk, we have this in common. Mahu rachum afato rachum. Mahu chanun afato chanun. Mahu erech hapayim afato erech hapayim. When we realize that we can be godly and we recognize the godless ha'odom, it's a whole different story. We have the ability to connect with Hashem because we are like Him. A very dramatic example of this, I heard actually from Chaim Shmulevitz, and I also heard it from my Rebbe, the Roshiva, the Chofetz Chaim Yeshiva, many years ago. The Sifri says on the Pesuk, Kedoshim Tiyu Ki Kodesh Oni Ani Hashem Alekechem. Should be holy because I am holy. So the Sifri says, Kodeshim Tiyu, Yochol Komoini, you might think you should be as holy as HaKadosh Baruch Hu. Holy means separate, above and above and above and beyond all the pchisus and all the lowliness and pettiness of this world. Talmud Lomar Ani Hashem Alekechem. No, you can't be. So they both point. There's a Havamina. If the Torah only said Kodeshim Tiyu, you think you should be just like Hashem. That's the greatness of the human being. That if the Torah didn't say Ani Hashem Alekechem, I would say, oh, he expects me just like him. Me and him, identical. Identical twins. If they recognize the godless. You know, when the Altam Slabotka, before he started the Slabotka Yeshiva, he met Rabbi Saul Salanta. And he asked him, how do you make a yeshiva? And he told him one posik. Lahachis ruach shvolim, lahachis lev nitkoim. Uplift the broken spirits. Up, elevate people. Let them recognize their own greatness. And from the vantage point of greatness, we can accomplish the greatest achievements. And from the vantage point of godliness, we can actually allow ourselves to relate more to HaKadosh Baruch Hu, to connect with Him, because we're like from the same family, you know. We got to say, we're not quite, you know, Talmud Lema, Ani Hashem Lekechem. We have it. We can elevate. And when, first of all, it creates a whole atmosphere of self-growth. The Medrash says, the Medrash in Parshas Lech Lecha, Medrash Rabbah, that the reason for all the mitzvahs is letzarif v'nes habriyos, to refine human character. Refine the character means to make us godly. And the more they feel godly, the more they feel elevated, the more they feel they can be like Hashem, the more they can connect with Hashem, and we've come full circle in this developing relationship. Okay. I don't like to say questions, because that means, you know, say he, how does it say, Beshukei Tveria sat there and said he's going to answer all the questions. Well, I don't know any answers. I only know the prepared speech that I memorized. Yeah, go ahead.
I heard right now,
just a little louder,
about
please.
Ahavat Hashem.
Okay.
Right? But the key very, very often is me about Yirat Hashem. How do I address?
Okay. Now, I'm going to tell you what's very unpopular in the yeshiva world. And I am also very unpopular in the yeshiva world for a lot of my views. But never stopped me. In fact, I enjoy the notoriety, you know. So, there's a Rashi at the end of Kehelis. Rashi, Shlomo HaMelech, good authority, right? Two of the best authorities. The Pesuk says, Soif Dovra Kol Nishma, Es Elokim Yiro, Ves Mitzvay Sob Shmor, Ki Ze Kol Ha'odom. That's the Pesuk, okay? Zot Rashi, es Hashem Yiro, ma shetuchal asei belibchol Hashemayim. What you can do, do, and have your heart focused on heavenward at growing and becoming better. Rashi tells us that Shlomo HaMelech told us that the core definition of Yira Shomayim, Seif Dover HaKoil Nishma, after he went through the whole world and Mahavil Avolim, and there's nothing out there, what is there one thing? Yira Shomayim. And what's the definition of Yira Shomayim? Mashetuchal Asei, Belibchal Hashomayim. And the next, he continues, Ki Lezeh Nivra Ha'odam. That's the purpose we were created for. That's something that our children, our students have to hear today. They have to know that. It's not, by the way, it's not a fallback position. It's not, oh, Nebuch, do the best you can. You know, this little schwache student over here said, oh, Nebuch, please do the best you can. You know, that's all we can. Do the best you can. Only get a 50, that's okay. Go. No, that's the definition of Yirat Shomayim. Mashatucha Lasei. Very, very important. And the reason it's so important is something else. Many kids today are very sincere. We know that. You know, as they get older, they get less tmimistic. But they're especially younger, they're very tmimistic. And they get overwhelmed with this Yerushalayim. That's why they're asking you. Yerushalayim, fear, fear, fear. Nobody wants to be afraid, but... So, you have to let them know. This is what the definition of Yerushalayim that Rashi gives. Pshat in Shleima HaMelech, the Chochom Mikol Odom, is Mashatuch HaLaseh. You could look at that Rashi itself. It's at the very end. The Libcha HaLashalayim. That's number one. Number two, the Pasuk says in Tehillim, Ki Imcha HaSlicho L'man Tivorei. With you Hashem is forgiveness in order that you be feared. That's counterintuitive. The more that I know He's forgiving, the less I'm going to be afraid of Him. Right? Right? The more that He forgives, then I should be less afraid. If I knew He wasn't forgiving, then I'd really be afraid. So what are you telling me? Ki Imcha HaSlicho L'man Tivorei. With you Hashem is forgiveness in order that people fear you. So the pshat that Ramban learns pshat in that post, like he says like this: if we didn't know that Hashem is the loving, forgiving God, fear would paralyze us. And when fear paralyzes us, we just run away. You know, when it gets too hot, you run out of the kitchen. So it's because Imcha Aslicha, now we can have Yerushalayim. So even the Yerushalayim that we have, and if you want, you can apply Shleima HaMelech's definition according to Rashi, Kibashatuch HaSei V'Lim Chol HaShemayim, even that is not supposed to be overwhelming. And we have to know, Hashem forgives. Once we know how loving, caring, kind, and forgiving Hashem is, now we can allow ourselves to be concerned. But if not, the concern, and that's what some of our kids have today. They know about the responsibilities, they don't know about the love of Hashem, and they don't have that relationship and how much He cares for us, and the fear is overwhelming. If I know how much Hashem loves me, if I know how much Hashem loves Rishoyim, I mean, none of our kids are that, but even so, to know that, I think those two can help you with that question.
How is one supposed to
again, I missed the question. Well, maybe I need more time to think. Go ahead. That's a good trick, Casey. Yeah, go ahead.
How do we, with all this idea, we talk about how much we act, we do all of the ideas that Rabbi Cohen has said. At the end of the day, kids come and say, I'm not getting anything. So the answer is what? Takes a few years.
You mean he's not getting what he's asking for, or he doesn't
not
appreciate
what I'm asking for? Have kavana. If the answer is LMI, you didn't have enough kavana. Is that the answer? So, how do you?
Well, so I thought that I addressed that, and maybe I didn't address it adequately. But that's not even a possibility. Anyway, so what I do think is that we let people know that Hashem is so concerned for us and loves us so much that He evaluates the tefillos in terms of what's going to be good for us. He evaluates the tefillos. Now, this particular thing that you're asking for, you think it's great. You think it's the most important thing in the world. And really, it's going to lead you down the wrong path. It's going to lead you into bankruptcy. It's going to lead you into sickness. It's going to get you into an accident. It's going to this, that, the other thing. Hashem knows that. Now, if we don't have a relationship with Hashem, or a concept, all the things we spoke about, then that speech is hollow, right? But in the context, yeah, I know how much Hashem loves us. I know what kind of relationship we have. I understand His involvement in everything. You know, even 75 cents He's worried about. So then they will be able to, and maybe not in one session. You see, one of the things, you know, we didn't discuss, because obviously we didn't discuss everything here, is one of the key things we need in the role as educators is patience. Long-term results. Listen, you may not look. I know I came to the San Fernando Valley. I was just out of Kulil. I thought I could conquer the world, and it took a long time to break through over there. So, but you have to have the patience. It's not going to happen overnight. You know, the first session you're not going to get it through. The next session, and by the way, what we have to do is to pray for them that they should be able to see it. Praying for your talmidim or your talmidos is such an important thing. Such an important thing, because then Elabai, we do get it, right? We do believe that it's going to work. And Memela, we add our tefillas to theirs, and we just let them know. If they know in the context of the love and the relationship, I think that will sell gradually. And then you'll find times that they will come to you. I mean, I hear stories every day. People come to tell me how they daven for this. They couldn't believe how it happened. Yes, Hashem has cheshbonos. If we don't recognize that Hashem ultimately knows much more than we do and is more concerned for our own well-being, and with his infinite knowledge is more directly on top of our well-being, then it's not going to work. That's the best I could do. Yes, wait, what?
Won't you say you're talking out of both sides of your mouth?
Why? I do that all the time. Okay. Okay, go ahead.
On the one hand, Hashem, I feel this mask. No, Hashem didn't answer me now because something's going to happen
no.
in the future.
Okay.
Right, maybe okay. for something else, or it's not good for me right now.
Mm-hmm.
On the other hand, you see, Hashem answered that other guy's tefillas and he went bankrupt, right? So does Hashem do bad things?
But no, that was good for him. By the way, your example you gave was just perfect for me. I'm going to tell you some of the biggest financial people in the world today started building their empire from a bankruptcy. Bankruptcy is a wonderful thing. You know the story about bankruptcy. This guy used to be such a gvir, and one day the pastor is driving by, and he sees him changing a tire on an old jalopy, an old car like this. He says, "What happened to you?" He says, "Well, I have such problems in business. I don't know what to do. It's really getting rough, the business, things are not what you used to drive, a chauffeured limo, So he says, "Go home and open up the Bible, and you'll get your answer what you should do." So a few months later, he sees him back with the chauffeur and the limo and everything. He says, "What happened?" He says, "I took your advice. I opened it up, and it opened up to chapter 11. It's bankruptcy. I said this joke once in Canada. Nobody laughed because they don't have chapter 11 over there. But anyway, so, Lois, we don't know. Maybe we left out a lesson that doesn't have directly to do with relationship, but impacts relationship, and I should add it to my list over here. And that is, ultimately, we have to know that Hashem knows better than we do. Ultimately, we have to know that Hashem not only is in control of everything, but He's the kol yochol, kol yodea hakol. He's the omnipotent and omniscient. He knows everything. And the Mela, once I take that and factor that into it, that should be able to. You had your hand up? Yeah.
I was going to say, I'm embarrassed with anything of your own, but I just wanted to add a draft for what you were saying. I don't know if you really said it, but just...
Well, you weren't listening?
No, I was.
Oh, okay, good.
Sure,
my granddaughter, I could talk like that, Okay. Anyway, go ahead.
I'm saying, when you say Hashem knows better, still they have to know that there's no such thing in the world as someone crying and begging Hashem for something and zilch happens.
Have you been listening to my speeches?
Yeah.
Oh, okay, good. Because I forgot to say that. Yes. Thank you very much. I appreciate that.
Now,
thank you.
Even if that thing didn't
100%.
Happen,
100%. One thing is for sure. A tefillah is never wasted. If the tefillah didn't work for this, you look at the Pele Yoyetz. He has a whole tefillah about tefillah. And he says that, and if you can't do it for this, then do it for something else. If you can't do it for me, do it for my children. And no tefillah is ever, tefillah is a lotion in Chazal, tefillah is a machzah. Tefillah always accomplishes something. So they have to also realize that if it didn't accomplish this, it may have accomplished even something more that you haven't seen yet, or have accomplished something for your parents or your children. Or so, absolutely very important. Okay, I think the time has come, unless there's any urgent... Okay, thank you very much.
I forgot to give sort of like an introduction.
Introduction?
Because it was like...
Am I getting another hour and a half?
No, but we're getting like another 10 hours.